Turn in your Bibles to Genesis 51. Genesis chapter 51. Clever is an interesting word. It can mean intelligent and bright or smart. Someone from New England, a clever person, is easygoing, but not too bright. But from the South, they're just a pleasant person. But to the British, a clever person often should not be trusted. They tend to turn their cleverness against you. But a clever move to a Scotsman is commendable. If it was a deceptive feint that got the soccer player around his defender, but boy, is it contemptible if a person avoiding the intent of a contract. We have clever people and clever sins in our text this morning. So what are Laban and Jacob up to here? Are they being clever? Just smart and shrewd? Are they making clever moves? Underhanded, sneaky, without integrity? See, God is at work to change the character and the personality of Jacob. We cannot ever say over the way we are in our attitudes and actions, oh, well, that's just the way I am. Personality is not fixed. It is the current expression of habitual attitudes and actions that are molded by the past, combined with whatever depravities we have inherited and graces God has bestowed. But by God's grace, even personalities can be changed into what is pleasing to God. Jacob is clever, sneaky, conniving, thieving, cruel, and crafty. For our introduction to him at his birth, all the way to the end of chapter 33, God is bringing ever-increasing pressure to shatter and to shape Jacob into becoming a very different kind of man. Yet all along, God is also using each of these situations to fulfill his promises to Jacob. He has promised him a people, a land, and great prosperity. So God is at work to both chasten and bless Jacob at the very same time through the very same circumstances. Now this is a great mercy for all of us. God is at work. God is at work to break us. And He is at work to shape us. And often all at the very same time. So we find here some clever sins as they are bargaining for advantage in verses 25 through 34. Now, for those of us who don't grow up in an agrarian society, we read this with a sort of dimness and distance. And I'm not going to pretend to be a farmer. In fact, I hate yard work. I grew up with goats and chickens and elephants and antelope, and I like computers. But here are two powerful men, tribal chieftains related by marriage, who now have to work out an exit strategy. Moses writes, beginning in verse 25, as soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know that service I have given to you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." And Jacob said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your livestock has fared with me, for you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have turned. Now, when shall I provide for my own household? And he said, well, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you will not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look into my wages with you. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted as stolen. And Laban said, good, let it be as you have said. Now, notice that the contract has been fulfilled. Jacob is seeking to leave and part from Laban amicably. He announces that he has kept their agreement. He now wishes to leave with his wives and family. He has served out the 14 years in fulfillment of his agreement. And Laban is being honored here as the titular clan leader. He wants to return to his own people, and no disrespect is intended. And a small but important digression. Some Christians are misusing the Bible by taking narrative accounts like this and developing principles from them. And we must distinguish between what is commanded and commended in the Bible and what is simply the culture in which the Bible is functioning. The Old Testament is full of a sort of clan and family clustered living together. This does not mean that clan living is the biblical way. It does not mean that it is wrong, although my observation of it in the Bible is that it is an opportunity and provocation for all sorts of family troubles. And just because Jacob lives in a tribal clan style of culture, does that mean that we ought to, as much as possible, live near and in close contact with all of our extended families? It does not mean that the living grandfathers oversee the son and the grandson's families. Patriarchal clan system is culture. It is not Christian. Now, why do I take the time to say this? Well, there's a teaching going around now. It's very popular in some Christian circles. It's being taught as the Bible way. And people doing it another way are, in fact, either foolish or probably actually are sinning. This idea is commonly called courtship. Strong advocates of courtship are taking the culture in which Christianity exists in the Bible and are turning it into Christianity. Now, I'm not saying courtship is wrong, but don't hold it up as some sort of spiritually superior dating when a good deal of it is actually medieval and not biblical. There are many things like this that we must be careful about. Maybe a way of wisdom, but it is not necessarily the revealed will of God. But it is clear that this desire to return is triggered by the birth of Joseph. Rachel now has her own son. Whatever has been between Laban and Jacob, Joseph's birth stirred Jacob to consider leaving and returning to his homeland. Now, the text does not tell us clearly why this is so. From Jacob's treatment of Joseph, effectively honoring him as the primary heir, it may be that Jacob was already thinking of him in this way. And since he now had the heir that he would actually honor, he needs to establish that heir in the lands where God has promised. And then the blessing is acknowledged in verses 27 through 30. Before Jacob came and was a part of Laban's life and family, Laban appears not to have been a successful person and not prosperous. For all his knowing the value of everything and the worth of nothing, God had seen fit to not bless Laban with prosperity. That all changed when Jacob entered the picture, and Laban seems to understand this. Now, he may understand this just as an observation of reality, but he also knows because of divination, fortune telling, that it is God who has behind the blessing of being associated with Jacob. Now, if that's not talking out of both sides of your mouth at the same time, I don't know what is. Fortune telling does not tell you what Yahweh is saying or doing. If Jacob leaves now, Laban may well see his fortunes decline and his prosperity wane. Now, let's think about that for a moment. Laban here is clearly a pagan, unbelieving man. He is involved in divination, a form of witchcraft. He seems to be attempting to ascertain whether his own gods or the God of Jacob is the best deity. If Jacob's deity is causing the blessing of prosperity, and Jacob is the mediator of that blessing, then he cannot afford to have Jacob move away. Laban's involvement in witchcraft and idol worship has deeply affected his view of life and his children. We'll find later that when Jacob does leave, Rachel steals the household gods. Now, I have to kind of chuckle at that. I want to steal your gods. Now, Laban is a smart and a shrewd man. He asks Jacob to name his wages if he will stay and promises to give them. He's had 14 years of service at the cost of two daughters. What now will Jacob demand as his wage? But Laban views his paying of the wage as a benefactor, as a giver. I will give you your wages, he says. And here's a crafty man choosing his words carefully. Jacob can name his wages and even work for them. But Laban, as the benefactor, the giver, is not bound to pay what is earned. But rather, he can give whatever he chooses. And so an agreement is struck. Verse 31 to 34. Jacob has spent 14 years in the painful employ of this man. He knows that the bare words of the contract will be followed. He knows that the interpretation of the contract will be filled with assumptions and certainly with advantages for Laban. After all, one clever man certainly recognizes another clever man. And he has agreed to 7 years of labor for a wife. But Laban gave him Leah instead of Rachel. He is on guard. He hears wages and gives. So he counters. Now, Laban is not going to give him anything. He states clearly his wages will be, how that will be identified, and when they will be paid. His wages will be all of the mottled, the speckled and spotted sheep and goats, as well as all the black lambs. He will go through the herds, cull out these sheep, and incorporate them into his herd. He will then care for Laban's flocks and herds. Now, the phrasing in verse 33 is very interesting. See, he is concerned that Laban is going to accuse him of theft. Makes it clear that in accepting his wages in this way, Laban can never accuse him of growing his flocks and herbs by theft. The mottled animals will produce other mottled animals. I love the sort of jockeying and maneuvering of two crafty, clever men seeking to gain an advantage and to protect their interests. Each one is just absolutely sure he's outsmarting the other. And Laban agrees quickly. Now, some speculate because he agreed because this looks like a great deal for him. They say that mottled sheep and goats would be less value, and the removing of them would reduce the future possibility of having these kinds of inferior animals. I think he agrees quickly because he has already observed a loophole, and has already planned what he actually does next. Verses 35 to 43 There is maneuvering for advantage. Now, what a great and interesting drama the next few verses are. With an agreement in hand, Laban seeks to maneuver for advantage. In response, Jacob uses his superior knowledge and practice of husbandry to outwit and outmaneuver Laban. Verse 35, Moses writes, "But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and he put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. And then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees, and peeled white streaks in them, and exposing the white of the sticks, he set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks and the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and the flocks brought forth, striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the flocks toward the stripe, and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. And whenever the stronger the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler became Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants, male servants, and camels and donkeys." Now, Laban begins with a crafty separation of the herds in verses 35 through 36. What a sneaky thief Laban is. Before Jacob can call out his wages, Laban removes all that would have been Jacob's initially. You can almost see him walking slowly away from Jacob, and then as soon as he is out of sight, running to his herd and his sons and his herdsmen. He goes through the whole herd, identifies every one of the sheep and goats that would have been Jacob's, and he separates them out from the herd. He is keeping the letter of the agreement. Jacob can have all those kinds of sheep at the time he goes through the herd. But if these sheep and goats are not there, then, well, he kept his end of the bargain. You should have thought of this, Jacob. You're just not as smart as you think you are. Esau was an easy mark. Laban, not so much. Well, to shield them from Jacob, he divides his herd, gives Jacob's portion to his sons, thus excluding them from the count. In other words, they are no longer Laban's sheep or goats. They are now his sons. They've already been given as an inheritance and thus are shielded from the agreement. To ensure this, he and his flock move to a standard 3 days' journey away. Thus, he puts a safe distance between Jacob and himself. This is not the end of the game. Jacob is a skillful breeder of the herds, verses 37 to 43. Now, we are not told Jacob's reaction to this. We don't know whether he was angry or feeling cheated. It would be easy for us to impute our own motives. Was he grinning to himself because he anticipated something like this from Laban and he already knew what he was going to do? Well, at any rate, Jacob is not going to be bested. He is, after all, this would make a great movie, wouldn't it? He is, after all, a master herdsman under whose care Laban's flocks and herds have prospered. So he begins to implement a plan that was a mix of current folklore and a profound understanding of animal breeding. Using the understanding he has and the skill he has developed over the years, he begins to breed Laban's remaining flock under his care. The purpose here is twofold. He is seeking to breed multicolored and black sheep and goats for his wages, He is also ensuring the vitality of his own flock, and he is breeding weakness into Laban's. The mechanism that Jacob is recorded as using was and still is very much a part of husbandry folklore. Certainly, he later acknowledges that God was the invisible one working behind the scenes to actually cause the animals to give birth to multicolored sheep and goat. He's using a visible mechanism, possibly because there is a direct connection, and possibly because he is providing a false mechanism that Laban may later emulate to no avail. The text makes a word play on the name Laban. For as Jacob peeled back the bark and the sticks and exposed the Laban, white, he saw his flocks grow. He played the Laban game and won. The second mechanism that Jacob used is just wise and skillful management of breeding. He ensures that the stronger animals are breeding for the variegated colors. He sets all the weaker animals in Laban's flock and the stronger ones in his own. And over time, this will strengthen his own flock and weaken Laban's. And this is what's being recorded in verse 43. Through his practical application of his skill and knowledge to the problem at hand, his prosperity increases and becomes vast in his wealth. He not only increases his sheep and goats, but his whole standing as a tribal chieftain grows as he increases his servants and other herds as well. Now the story takes an abrupt turn in verse 1 of chapter 31. It continues, but it turns. Here is an acknowledgement of God's intervention. God now moves to dislodge Jacob and actually send him back to his homeland. In verses 1 to 3, there is the ruining of the relationship. Back into verse 31. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that it was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth. Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. And then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred. I will be with you. Now, Laban's sons begin to complain. They are jealous of Jacob's wealth. They seem to accuse him of acquiring what should have been theirs. They had originally stolen what was Jacob's. Now, they want to accuse him of stealing or at least diminishing their inheritance. Now, Jacob observed that Laban's attitude toward him is changing as a result of their complaint. Laban had looked on Jacob with favor. You have to wonder if he views Jacob as something of a patsy, someone he can take advantage of as a ready mark for his schemes. Jacob has married both of his daughters, has produced 10 grandsons, has allowed himself to be duped out of his wages. He has increased Laban's flock, all the while possibly not realizing the flock is growing in quantity, but is actually diminishing in quality. The boys, however, are starting to persuade him. Furthermore, since he is a thief, and since Jacob is increasing his own wealth on the back of Laban's, he may well be turning against Jacob. Then God steps in and settles the questions of staying or leaving. God instructs Jacob to return to his land and to his family. God has blessed him, and now God promises to be with him. In verses 4 to 13, then we have the rehearsal of God's favor. Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was and said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with the favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me. He has changed my wages 10 times, but God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the livestock of your father, and he's given them to me. The breeding season of the flock. I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream that the goats mated with the flock, were striped and spotted and mottled. And the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with the flock are striped and spotted and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise. Go out from this land and return to the land of your kindred. Well, Jacob gathers his family around to talk with them about what God is doing. He now divulges to his family why he has moved with such care and confidence in his dealings with Laban. All along, he has been in communion with and commanded by the Lord. When Laban tried to cheat him, God instructed him on what to do. And we also find out that Laban had constantly been changing the agreement. Yet God helped Jacob at each point. The scriptures once again point us to a wonderful lesson. We plan, we work hard, we are involved in the routine work of what we do. God gives wisdom all along the way, sometimes such that we prosper even while being taken advantage of. Behind all our labor is God's work. Jacob is doing what he can and could, and God was at work at what Jacob could not control. And finally, he rehearses the dream that God gave him. The angel of the Lord comes to him and reminds him that he is the God of Bethel, the house of God. He reminds him of the sacrifice and the honor that he gave to God many years ago. God also reminds him that of the promise of the maid. Now it is time. It is time to go home. And we have the response of the family, verses 14 to 16. And then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he hath sold us. Listen to their attitude. He has sold us, and he has indeed devoured our money. All the wealth that God has taken away from our fathers belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do. Both Leah and Rachel respond well to the proposed move. Laban's late actions have estranged them from him, eaten up their inheritance, enlarged their wealth in Jacob's home. Why stay here? God has spoken to Jacob, commanded him to return. So, when do we leave? There's a wonderful example of how to interact, rare as it may be in the Bible, and certainly in this home. The husband, as a leader of the home, wants to please God and aims to walk in wisdom. He works hard, trusting God to accomplish what is needed. He gathers his family and rehearses the faithfulness of God. He interprets what has happened through a God-centered lens. And the wives then see God at work and have an accurate and realistic view of what has happened. And they align their hearts to submit to their husband and to obey God. Well, how do we grapple with a text like this in our world today? First, God takes even the sinful scheming of men and turns it into good. God designed and determined that the sins of Laban and Jacob would move redemptive history forward. Secondly, God is at work doing whatever it takes to make you more and more like Christ. Romans 8:28-30 teaches us this great truth. Our souls will be deeply comforted if we will map this truth over everything in our lives. And God will work through even the most difficult of circumstances to give wisdom and power to accomplish what He intends. Often that wisdom uses our experiences and our abilities in working out God's will. But we depend on that wisdom and intentionally reach for it when we in prayer ask God for it in faith. And then, sometimes we're too clever for our own good. How often are we trying to avoid God's providences? Or we're trying to force our own plans? We have our own agenda. But God will work through even these clever schemes to bring us to see ourselves and to rely on Him. Often, God will use our own sins and sins like them of others to transform us. It's very clear and easy to see that deceit and dishonesty corrode character. For all of you who engage in the business world, hold fast to being honest in all your dealings. And Christians should be open and above board in their dealings while recognizing the value of skill and subtlety. And finally, Jesus stands in stark contrast to all of this. His dealing with people was always open and transparent. Words of an agreement were not things used to maneuver for self-gain and advantage. May we ever see God at work to make us like Christ and to reflect His glory, even when clever sinners cleverly sin against us. Father, what a story. What an amazing story of two sneaky, conniving, clever men maneuvering and planning and plotting to outdo each other and making these incredible decisions. And all along behind the scenes, you are simply moving your purposes and your plan and your providences forward so that Jacob will go home blessed, rich in herds, wives, and children. Not because he's so clever, but because you are such an amazingly great God. Help us to never forget that you are making us to be like Christ. And that though there may be obstacles that seem like setbacks, they are always being used and molded and shaped by your great and gracious will. So that at the end of days, when we stand before you, we will stand blameless. In Jesus' name, and for His great glory.